He wanted to sleep. He'd never felt this tired before. Vimes slumped to his knees and then fell sideways onto the sand. When he forced open his eyes, he saw pale stars above him, and had once again the sensation that there was someone else present. He turned his head, wincing at the stab of pain, and saw a small but brightly lit folding chair on the sand. A robed figure was reclining in it, reading a book. A scythe was stuck in the sand beside it. A white, skeletal hand turned a page.
"You'll be death, then," said Vimes, after a while.
"Ah, Mr. Vimes, astute as ever, got it in one," said Death, shutting the book on his finger to keep the place. "I've seen you before. I have walked with you many times, Mr. Vimes."
"And this is it, is it?"
"Has it never struck you that the concept of a written narrative is somewhat strange?" said Death.
Vimes could tell when people were trying to avoid something they really didn't want to say, and it was happening here.
"Is it?" he insisted. "Is this it?"
"Could be."
"Could be? What sort of answer is that?" said Vimes.
"A very accurate one. You see, you are having a near-death experience, which inescapably means that I must undergo a near-Vimes experience. Don't mind me. Carry on with whatever you are doing. I have a book."
Vimes rolled over onto his stomach, gritted his teeth, and pushed himself onto his hands and knees again. He managed a few yards before slumping back down. He heard the sound of a chair being moved.
"Shouldn't you be somewhere else?" he said.
"I am," said Death, sitting down again.
"But you're here."
"As well."
Death turned a page and, for a person without breath, managed a pretty good sigh.
"It appears that the butler did it."
"Did what?"
"It is a made-up story. Very strange. All one need do is turn to the last page and the answer is there. What, therefore, is the point of deliberately not knowing?"
It sounded like gibberish to Vimes, so he ignored it. Some of the aches had gone, although his head still hammered. There was an empty feeling everywhere. He just wanted to sleep.
"Is that clock right?"
"I'm afraid it is, Sybil."
"I'll just go outside and wait for him, then. I'll have the book ready," said Lady Sybil. "He won't let anything stop him, you know."
"I'm sure he won't," said Bunty. "Although things can be very treacherous in the Lower Valley at this time of—"
Her husband began, and was fried into silence by his wife's stare. It was 6 minutes to six.
"Loggle, buggle, oggle, sloggle."
It was a very little watery sound, and came from somewhere in Vimes's trousers. After a few moments, enough time to recollect that he had both hand and trousers, he reached down and with a struggle freed the gooseberry from his pocket. The case was battered, and the imp, when Vimes had got the flap open, was quite pale.
"Oh, goggles, soggle."
Vimes stared at it. It was a talking box. It meant something.
"Woggles, soggle."
Slowly, Vimes tipped the box up. Water poured out of it.
"You weren't listening. I was shouting and you weren't listening," the imp whined. "It's 5 minutes to six. Read to young Sam."
Vimes dropped the protesting box on his chest and stared up at the pale stars.
"Must read to young Sam," he murmured, and shut his eyes.
They snapped open again.
"Got to read to young Sam."
The stars were moving. It wasn't the sky. How could it be the sky? It was a bloody cave, wasn't it? He rolled over and got to his feet in one movement. There were more stars now, drifting along the walls. The Verms were moving with a purpose. Overhead they had become a glowing river. Although they were flickering a little, the lights were also coming back on in Vimes's head. He peered into what was now no longer blackness but merely gloom, and gloom was like daylight after the darkness that had gone before.
"Got to read to young Sam," he whispered to a cavern of giant stalactites and stalagmites, all gleaming with water. "To read to young Sam."
Stumbling and sliding through shallow pools, running across the occasional patch of white sand, Vimes followed the lights. Sybil tried not to look at the worried faces of her host and hostess as she crossed their hall. The minute hand on the grandfather clock was nearly on the 12 and trembling. She threw open the front door. There was no Sam there, and no one galloping down the road. The clock struck the hour. She heard someone step quietly beside her.
"Would you like me to read to the young man, madam?" said Willikins. "Perhaps a man's voice would—"
"No, I'll go up," said Sybil quietly. "You wait here for my husband. He won't be long."
"Yes, madam."
"He'll probably be quite rushed."
"I shall usher him up without delay, madam."
He will be here, you know.
Yes, madam.
He will walk through walls.
Sybil climbed the stairs as the chimes ended. The clock was a wrong clock. Of course it was. Young Sam had been installed in the old nursery of the house, a rather sombre place full of greys and browns. There was a truly frightening rocking horse, all teeth and mad glass eyes. The boy was standing up in his cot. He was smiling, but it faded into puzzlement as Sybil pulled up a chair and sat down next to him.
"Daddy has asked Mummy to read to you tonight, Sam," she announced brightly. "Won't that be fun?"
Her heart did not sink. It could not. It was already as low as any heart could go. But it curled up and whimpered as she watched the little boy stare at her, at the door, at her again, and then throw back his head and scream. Vimes, half limping and half running, tripped and fell into a shallow pool. He'd stumbled over a dwarf, a dead one, very dead. So dead, in fact, that the dripping water had built a small stalagmite on him, and with a film of milky stone had cemented him to the rock against which he sat.
"Got to read to young Sam," Vimes told the shadowy helmet earnestly.
A little way away, on the sand, was a dwarf's battle-axe. What was going on in Vimes's mind was not exactly coherent thought, but he could hear faint noises up ahead, and an instinct as old as thought decided there was no such thing as too much cutting power. He picked it up. It was covered with no more than a thin coat of rust. There were other humps and mounds on the cavern floor, which, now that he came to look at them, might be "No time, read book." At the end of the cavern, the ground sloped up, and had been made treacherous by the dripping water. It fought back, but the axe helped. One problem at a time. Climb hill, read book. And then the screaming started. His son, screaming. It filled his mind. They will burn. A staircase floated in his vision, reaching endlessly upwards into darkness. The screaming came from up there. Feet slithered. The axe bit into the milky stone. Weeping and cursing, sliding at every step, Vimes struggled to the top of the slope. A new, huge cave spread out below. It was busy with dwarfs. It looked like a mine. There were four of them, only a few feet away from Vimes, whose vision was full of rocking lambs. They stared at this sudden, bloody, swaying apparition, which was dreamily waving a sword in one hand and an axe in the other. They had axes too, but the thing glared at them and asked, "Where's my cow?" They backed away. "Is that my cow?" the creature demanded, stepping forward unsteadily. It shook its head sadly. "It goes baa," it wept. "It is a sheep." Then it fell to its knees, clenched its teeth, and turned its face upwards, like a man tortured beyond his wits and gods of fortune and the tempest, and screamed, "That is not my cow." The cry echoed around the cavern and broke through mere rock. So great was the force behind it, melted mere mountains, screamed across the miles, and in the sombre nursery young Sam stopped crying and looked around, suddenly happy but puzzled, and said to his despairing mother, surprise, "Coo." The dwarfs backed away down the slope. Overhead, the worms were still pouring in, outlining the invader against their green-white glow. "Where is my cow? Is that my cow?" it demanded, following them. In every part of the cavern, dwarfs had stopped work. There was hesitancy in the air. This was only one man, after all, and the thought in many minds was, "What is someone else going to do about this?" It had not yet progressed to, "What am I going to do about this?" Besides, where was the cow? There were cows down here. "It goes nay! It is a horse! That's not my cow!" Dwarfs looked at one another. "Where was the horse, then? Did you hear a horse? Who else is down here?" The four guards had retreated to the cavern for advice and reorientation. There were a number of deep-downers there, clustered in frantic conversation and watching the approaching man. In Vimes's strobing vision there were fluffy bunnies, too, and quacky ducks. He had dropped to his knees again and was staring at the ground and crying. Half a dozen shrouded dark guards stepped out from the group. One of them carried ahead of him a flame weapon and advanced on the figure cautiously. The flame of its little pilot light was the brightest thing in the cave. The figure looked up. The light reflected red in his eyes and growled, "Is that my cow?" Then it threw the axe, overarm, full at the guards. It struck the flame weapon, which exploded. "It goes hurrah!"
"Goon,"
said young Sam, as his mother hugged him and stared blankly at the wall. Burning oil fountained across the dark. Some of it splashed on Vimes's arm. He slapped at it.
There was pain, intense pain, but he knew this only in the same way that he knew the moon existed. It was there, but it was a long way off, and it didn't affect him very much.
"That's not my cow," he said, standing up.
He strode on now, over the burning oil, through red-edged smoke, past the dwarfs rolling desperately on the ground to put out the flames. He seemed to be looking for something. Two more guards ran at him. Without appearing to notice them, Vimes crouched and whirled the sword around in a circle. A little lamb rocked in front of his eyes. A dwarf, with greater presence of mind than the others, had found a crossbow and was taking aim when he had to stop to brush away the bats streaming past him. He raised the bow again, looked around at a noise like two slabs of meat being slapped together, and was picked up and thrown across the cave by a naked woman. An astonished miner swung his axe at the smiling girl, who vanished in a cloud of bats. There was a lot of yelling going on. Vimes paid it no attention. Dwarfs were running through the smoke. He merely slapped them aside. He had found what he was seeking.
"Is that my cow? It goes moo!"
Picking up another fallen axe, Vimes started to run.
"Yes, that's my cow!"
The Grags were behind a ring of guards in a frantic huddle, but Vimes's eyes were on fire and there were flames streaming from his helmet. A dwarf holding a flamethrower threw it down and fled.
"Hooray, hooray, it's a wonderful day, for I have found my cow!"
And perhaps that, it was said later, was what did it. Against the berserker there is no defence. They had sworn to fight to the death, but not to this death. The slowest four guards went down to the axe and the sword, the others scattered and ran. And now Vimes paused in front of the cowering old dwarfs, raising the weapons over his head, and halted, rocking like a statue. Night forever, but within it a city, shadowy and only real in certain ways. The entity cowered in its alley, where the mist was rising. This could not have happened. Yet it had. The streets had filled with things. Animals, birds changing shape, screaming and yelling, and above it all, higher than the rooftops, a lamb rocking back and forth in great slow motions, thundering over the cobbles. And then bars had come down, slamming down, and the entity had been thrown back. But it had been so close. It had saved the creature. It was getting through. It was beginning to have control. And now this. In the darkness, above the rustle of the never-ending rain, it heard the sound of boots approaching. A shape appeared in the mist. It drew nearer. Water cascaded off a metal helmet and an oiled leather cloak as the figure stopped, and, entirely unconcerned, cupped its hands in front of its face and lit a cigar. Then the match was dropped on the cobbles, where it hissed out, and the figure said, "What are you?" The entity stirred, like an old fish in a deep pool. It was too tired to flee.
"I am the summoning dark."
It was not, in fact, a sound, but if it had been, it would have been a hiss.
"Who are you?"
"I am the watchman."
"They would have killed his family."
The darkness lunged and met resistance.
"Think of the deaths they have caused. Who are you to stop me?"
"He created me. Quis custodiet ipsos custodes. Who watches the watchman?" "Me. I watch him. Always. You will not force him to murder for you."
"What kind of human creates his own policeman?"
"One who fears the dark."
"And so he should,"
said the entity, with satisfaction. "Indeed. But I think you misunderstand. I am not here to keep darkness out. I'm here to keep it in." There was a clink of metal as the shadowy watchman lifted a dark lantern and opened its little door. Orange light cut through the blackness. "Call me the guarding dark. Imagine how strong I must be." The summoning dark backed desperately into the alley, but the light followed it, burning it. "And now," said the watchman, "get out of town." And went down as a werewolf landed on his back. Angua drooled. The hair along her spine stood out like a saw blade. Her lips curled back like a wave. Her growl was from the back of a haunted cave. Altogether, these told the brain of anything monkey-shaped that movement meant death. And that stillness, whilst it also meant death, didn't mean immediate, this actual second death. and was there for the smarter monkey option. Vimes didn't move. The growl knotted his muscles. Terror was in control. "I salute you," said a thought that was not his, and he felt the sudden absence of something whose presence he had not noticed. In the blackness behind his eyes, some dark fin swished and disappeared. He heard a whimper, and the weight on him disappeared. He rolled over and saw, fading in the middle of the air, a crude drawing of an eye and a tail. It dwindled into nothing, and the all-enveloping darkness slowly gave way to the light of the worms. Blood had been spilled. They were pouring down the walls. He felt... A certain amount of time passed. Vimes jerked awake. "I read it for him," he said, mostly to reassure himself. "You did, sir," said the voice of Angua behind him. "Very clearly, too. We were more than 200 yards away. Well done, sir. We thought you ought to have a rest." "What have I done well?" said Vimes, sitting up. The movement filled his world with pain, but he managed a brief glimpse before slumping back. There was a lot of smoke in the cave, but there were actual torches flickering here and there, and a great many dwarfs some distance away, some sitting down, some standing around in groups. "Why are there so many dwarfs here, Sergeant?" he asked, looking up at the cavern roof. "That is, why are there so many dwarfs here that aren't actually trying to kill us?"
"They're from the Low King, sir. We're their prisoners, sort of, but not exactly."
"Of Rhys? Bugger that," said Vimes, trying to get to his feet again. "I saved his bloody life once." He managed to get upright, but then the world pivoted around him, and he would have fallen if Angua hadn't caught him and lowered him onto a rock. Well, at least he was sitting up now.
"Not exactly prisoners," Angua said. "We can't go anywhere, but since we wouldn't know where to go even if we could go anywhere, it's all a bit superfluous.
Sorry I'm only in a shift, sir, but you know how it is. The dwarfs have promised to fetch my gear. It's all gone political, sir. The dwarf in command is a decent sort, but he's way out of his depth, so he's sticking with what he knows, sir. And, he doesn't know a lot. Do you remember anything about what happened? You've been out for a good 20 minutes.
Yes, there were... woolly lambs. Vimes's voice trailed into silence for a while. Somehow, what he'd just said took the ring of veracity and dropped it in a deep, deep hole.
There weren't woolly lambs, right?
I didn't see any, said Angua carefully. I did see a striding, screaming, vengeful maniac, sir, but in a good way, she added.
The internal Vimes looked at memories he didn't remember from the first time around.
He began. Everything's sort of fine, sir, said Angua quickly. But come and see this. Bashfulson said you ought to see everything.
Bashfulson? He's the know-it-all dwarf, right? He said.
Ah, it's all coming back, sir, said Angua. Good. He was a bit worried about that.
Vimes was steadier on his feet now, but his right arm hurt like hell, and all the other pains that the day had accumulated were coming back and waving. Angua carefully led him through puddles and across rocks as slippery as wet marble until he reached a stalagmite. It was about 8 feet high. It was a troll. It wasn't a rock shaped like a troll. It was a troll. They only got stonier when they died, Vimes knew, but the lines of this one had been softened by the milky rock dripped on the troll's head.
And now... "Look at this, sir," said Angua, leading him on. "They were destroying them."
There was another stalagmite, lying on its side in a pool. It had been smashed off at the base, and it was a dwarf. Dwarfs crumble after death just like humans, but all the armour, mail, chains and heavy leather mean there's no great change to the eye of the casual observer. The flowing rock had covered it all like a glistening shroud. Vimes straightened up and looked across the cavern. Shapes loomed in the gloom all the way to the near wall where the drip of ages had formed a perfect ivory waterfall frozen in time.
There are more?
About 20, sir. Half of them had been smashed before you... arrived. Look at this one over here, sir. You can just make them out. They're sitting back to back, sir.
Vimes stared at the figures under the glaze and shook his head. A dwarf and a troll together cemented in rock.
Is there anything to eat? He said. It wasn't the most awe-inspired thing to say, but it came from the stomach, with feeling.
"Our rations got lost in the excitement, sir, but the dwarfs will share theirs. They aren't unfriendly, sir, just cautious."
"Share? They have dwarf bread?"
"I'm afraid so, sir.
I thought it was illegal to give that to prisoners. I think I'll wait, thanks. And now, Sergeant, you can tell me about the excitement."
It hadn't exactly been an ambush. The dwarfs just caught up with them. Their captain had been given rather wide orders to follow Vimes and his party, and there had been a certain chilliness when he found that the party included two trolls.
This was still Coombe Valley, after all. Vimes felt a pang of sympathy for him. He'd had a simple job to do, and suddenly it was full of politics. Been there, done that, bought the singlet. Forward Greg Bashelson, who had a way with words, since they were all going the same way. And it had been a long way. The fleeing dwarfs had brought down the ceiling not far from the entrance tunnel, and a journey that had taken Vimes a few minutes had taken the pursuers the best part of a day, even with Sally scouting ahead. Angua spoke of caves even bigger than this, of vast waterfalls in the dark. Vimes said, yes, he knew. Then the words of Where's My Cow had boomed under Coombe Valley, shaking the Rock of Ages and making the stalactites hum in sympathy, and the rest had been a matter of running. I can remember reading to young Sam, said Vimes slowly, but there were these strange pictures in my head. He stopped. All that anger, all that red-hot rage had flowed out of him in a torrent without thought. I killed those damn soldiers. Most of them, sir, said Angua cheerfully. And there's a couple of miners who got in the way who'll be aching for months. It was all coming back to Vimes now. He wished it wasn't. There was always a part of the human brain that objected to fighting dwarfs. They were child-sized. Oh, they were also at least as strong as a human, and more resilient, and would take any advantage in a fight, and if you were lucky you learned to overcome that prejudice before you were hacked off at the knees. But it was always there. I remember those old dwarfs, he said. They were cowering like little maggots. I wanted to smash them. You resisted for almost 4 seconds, sir, and then I brought you down, said Angua. And that was a good thing, was it? Said Vimes. "Oh, yes, it's why you're still here, Commander," said Bashfulson, appearing from behind a stalagmite. "I'm glad to see you up and about again. This is an historic day. And you still have a soul, it appears. Isn't that nice?" "Now, you listen to me," Vimes began. "No, you listen to me, Commander. Yes, I knew you'd come to Coombe Valley, because the summoning dark would come here. It needed you to bring it. No, listen to me, because we don't have much time. The summoning dark symbol commands an entity as old as the universe, but it has no real body and very little physical strength. It can cover a million dimensions in the blink of an eye, but could barely make it across the room. It works through living creatures, especially ones it finds amenable. It found you, Commander, a cauldron of anger, and in small, subtle ways it saw that you got it to this place.
I believe him, sir, said Angua quickly. It was the one called up as a curse by one of the miners, remember? The one who drew the sign in his own blood? On a locked door? And you...
There was a door that stung when I touched it, I remember, said Vimes.
Are you telling me that behind that door he...
Oh, no.
He was already dead by then, sir. I'm positive about that, said Angua quickly. We couldn't have saved him.
Helmclever said... Vimes began... And Bashfulson must have seen the panic rising in his eyes, because he grabbed both Vimes's hands and spoke, fast and urgently.
"No, you didn't kill him. You didn't even touch him. You were afraid that if you did, I'd say you used force, remember?"
"He dropped dead.
How much force is that?" Vimes shouted. His voice echoed.
"There was a symbol, wasn't there? It's true that the creature tends to leave a signature on events... But you would have had to touch him. You did not. You did not raise a hand. I think you would have resisted even then. Resisted and won. Do you hear me? Calm down. Calm down. He died of fear and guilt. You must realize that.
What reason did he have to feel guilty?
Every reason for a dwarf. That mine bore down so heavily on him.
The Greg turned to Angua.
Sergeant, could you get the commander some water? It's as pure in these pools as anywhere in the world.
Well, it is if you pick one without a body floating in it.
You know, you could have avoided that last sentence, said Vimes.
He sat down on a rock. He could feel himself shaking now.
And then I got the damn thing here, he managed.
Yes, Commander, and it got you here too, I suspect. Cheery says she saw you drop into churning water half a mile from where we are now. Even a champion swimmer wouldn't have survived that.
I woke up on a beach...
It got you there. It swam for you.
But I was all knocked about.
Oh, it wasn't your friend, Commander. It needed to get you here in one piece. It didn't have to be a good-looking piece.
And then you disappointed it, Commander. You disappointed it.
Or perhaps impressed it. It's hard to tell.
You wouldn't strike the helpless, you see. You resisted.
I had the sergeant here bring you down, because I was frightened that the struggle inside would rip your tendons and your bones.
They were just frightened old men.
And so it appears to have let you go, said the dwarf. I wonder why. Historically, anyone subject to the summoning dark dies insane.